Our industry is littered with examples of garden centres trading next door to each other, nurseries working together in cooperatives. There's so many examples, whereas in other industries, they would just be doing everything they possibly could to eradicate each other. We support each other, we grow, we help each other, and we improve.
Welcome to the Underground Podcast. I'm Kate, the gardener guru, horticulture consultant, and writer and presenter on all things gardening.
And I'm Phil, co-founder of Right O'Bara, a creative marketing agency for the home and garden sectors. Join us in conversation with those people shaping the UK's garden care industry.
So without further ado,
let's get down and dirty.
Hi there, Kate.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
I am good. Thank you very much. And we are going to be kicking off series four. So we've had a bit of a break, but here we are with series four.
Already. And, goodness me.
I know. And today's conversation is going to be an absolute cracker.
Yep.
We're going to be talking with Will Armitage, who's the president of the HTA, and he's also a horticultural and agricultural consultant. So he's working with like nurseries and garden centres and those sorts of businesses as well on a consultancy business. And it really does run through his veins.
It really does. He has chlorophyll through his veins rather than blood, it would seem. And I'm really looking forward to hearing about the history of the Armitage family.
And also, I mean, just because he is the president of the HTA, and as we know, the HTA is such a powerhouse within the industry.
Absolutely. I think
what a great interview that we've got to kick off our new series.
Absolutely. And it's so good to be back. And it's great to see your face, Phil. It's been a little while. So, yeah. And here's to a few more good guests coming up on this new series of The Underground.
Hi there, Will.
Good morning. Hello.
Morning, Will.
Hi. Yeah, thanks ever so much for joining us on The Underground. Will, you've been involved in horticulture a long time. Can you tell us a bit more about your own journey and what led you to your current role as the president of the HTA?
Well, I started off, I didn't want to be part of the garden centre business. It was something that my parents did, and I've been quite rebellious. It was something that I didn't really want to have to do. So I took a national diploma in game, wildlife and habitat management at Sparshot College in Winchester back in the early 1990s. And that took me to working for Scottish Natural Heritage in the Cairngorms in Scotland, and also over to New Zealand as well. But coming back, I think the draw of the family business was there, and I ended up working for Barton Grange Garden Centres. They had the Woodford Garden Centre at the time, it's now a Notcuts Garden Centre over in Cheshire, and I worked there for a year before joining the family business in 1996-97. As sixth generation of the family to join the business.
Goodness.
The business was originally started in 1842 as a seed and corn merchant supplying agriculture.
Okay.
But as the textile mills took over in this region, as part of Yorkshire, the mill owners and mill managers all wanted to emulate the big stately homes. So they wanted fresh fruit and vegetables. And if you wanted fresh fruit and vegetables, you had to grow it yourself. So our agricultural seeds became more and more horticultural seeds, as they not just wanting fruit and vegetables, but fresh flowers and unusual plants. And they created hot houses and things like that. So we were pushed more towards horticulture, and that's really where it started.
I was just going to say, Will, in the background there in the shot, you've got a fantastic sign. You were just telling us a little bit about that. So can you?
Yeah, that was the glass panel in the front door of our shop. We became Armitage & Sons Seeds Limited in 1910, and the shop we moved out of in the 1960s, 1963. So that was the front door from 1910 to 1963.
Amazing.
But we were seed merchants. We also grew our own seeds. So we had winter gardens. We had two or three nurseries around Huddersfield where we grew our own seeds. Now, there's a story of my great-grandfather after the First World War, when the death duty started to be levied to pay for the war effort of the First World War, and the stately homes were being broken up. My great-grandfather would go to the auctions to buy window panes to put into the glass houses to grow the seeds.
Yeah.
So, of course, the window panes were all leaded, so they were going for quite a lot of money, and he couldn't afford those. But what he could afford was the pictures.
Right.
So the big portraits, big family portraits and landscapes from Victorian artists, with huge, great oil paintings, had glass over the front of them. So he bought those instead, took the glass out, glazed his greenhouses and hung the paintings on his barn wall.
That's incredible.
Kept some of them. But as a family, we have quite a few of these large paintings, and they're not really in favor of fashion anymore, so they're not worth a great deal, but they're imposing. Huge, yeah. Great big oil paintings that you need big rooms to fill.
What wonderful story.
So I said, I joined the business in 97 and at the same time also joined the board of the GCA as well. And I stayed on the board there until my chairmanship in 2014, 2016.
That's a long tenure.
It was off and on. I don't think it was all one, but I was sort of... I represented the younger, the YGCA, the Young Garden Centre Association, and then represented the North, the Northwest, and then it became the North of England GCA.
Right.
And back into the family business, I restructured and refinanced the business in 2005, so it became under the ownership of my immediate family. We all had uncles and aunts and lots of other members of the family involved at the time, but I brought it all back into one ownership. So that was in 2005. I thought, I better gain some formal qualifications as well. So I took postgraduate degrees in business and finance,
right,
and ran the business reasonably successfully, I think, up until we were approached in 2015 by Wyvale, who wanted to buy the business. We fought them off for a while, but my grandfather always said a family business is there to support the family. And it doesn't really matter what size or shape it is. It doesn't have to be horticulture, it could be anything. I mean, crikey, his grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, even though he was part of the Armitage and Sons Seeds Limited, he owned a coal mine. This is his business card from the 1870s.
Goodness me.
Goddard's Road Collieries in Barnsley. So we've always been adaptable. I think that's one of the good things about our industry, isn't it? We are adaptable. We don't yeah. stick to a rigid format.
Have to be.
So from 2015 onwards, I was sort of unofficially helping friends and colleagues in the industry in sort of an unofficial consultancy role, and also micromanaging the family. I was doing that really well, so they tell me. But sort of pandemic time, getting towards the end of the pandemic, they were moving off to university. So both our children went off to university. I suddenly found myself with an awful lot more time on my hands. And so we set up Mulch, which is a boutique gardening brand, set that up with Connor Powell, who was from ex-Haskins and Hobbycraft, and Jackie Eads, who was ex-Briars at the time. And we traded that through the UK, Europe, Australia, South Korea, and eventually sold that last February to Centurion Europe in Doncaster. So they're running with the brand now. So they took the brand and assets. And while I'd set up Mulch, I was asked to join the board of the HTA. And so I think I'm a bit of a serial joiner. If somebody asks me to join something, don't say no. You never know what might happen. So I joined the board. And while on the board, I was asked if I would like to be Alan Down's vice president. Mm-hmm. And so when Alan stepped down in September AGM last year, I then became the president. So here I am, HTA president.
Fantastic.
Goodness me, that is, I hate to use the word, but that's quite a journey you've been on there. So, I mean, goodness me, obviously it's in your blood, it runs through your veins, but what keeps you passionate about the horticultural sector, Will?
It's the people.
Right.
So gardeners are sharers, and this is something that I keep saying over and over again. We share everything. We share ideas, seeds, cuttings. It's how we develop, it's how we improve, it's how we get better at what we do. And it spills over into the gardening industry. Our industry is littered with examples of garden centres trading next door to each other, nurseries working together in cooperatives. And there's so many examples, whereas in other industries they would just be doing everything they possibly could to eradicate each other. We support each other, we grow, we help each other and we improve. And I think it's that. Once you've experienced other industries, you don't really realize how how much of an impact that has on our industry and why it is like it is.
Would you feel that we're in danger of losing a bit of that with more private equity firms coming in and buying up some of the companies and the manufacturers and a few garden centres?
Yes. Yes, we do. And you can see it when they first start, and they think they know how to work this industry, and then we see what happens. We've seen it over and over again. I mean, yeah. I don't think of myself as old, but I suppose when I've been doing this since 1997, so I've seen large private equity come in into the industry several times and try and do, the big take over the world, and then it just falls apart every single time. And it's the smaller independents that end up surviving.
Yeah, it's good to get your take on that, Will. So, Will, obviously you're the president of the HTA, and the HTA does a huge amount of work behind the scenes. And for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with what the organisation does, can you just give us a little bit of an overview of that and what your role is and how you go about that?
I could probably give a really long list of stuff, activities, things that the HTA is doing on a regular basis. But I would encourage anyone just to have a look at the HTA website, because they'd be able to see it all then. So anything I might miss, you'd be able to pick up from there. But it's really about gathering information from the industry and then using that information for the benefit of the industry. And it's done in so many different ways. So it's the gathering information from nurseries, growers, manufacturers, importers, landscapers, retailers, garden designers, everyone with an interest in the UK horticultural industry. And that information is done through business benchmarking, market segmentation, consumer insight and trends. It's done through questionnaires. It's done through regional events. It's done through even through horticultural, the Hort Talk podcast as well, that the HTA run.
Yep.
There are so many different ways that the HTA is constantly working to gather information from the industry. And then it's using that to support the lobbying that we do. So if as a member you receive a questionnaire about retail theft, it's so difficult. What we would love is for every single member to have the time to be able to give us all that information. So when we go to Parliament and say, look, we are really struggling here with retail theft, we need to get crime commissioners together and we need to get something done, because we're a soft touch and we're being targeted. We need all the information from the retailers so we can hit the government, we can hit the parliamentarians, the policymakers with hard facts as to what exactly is doing. And so that is what we do with the information that we gather. So the financial information that we gather, the trading trends that we gather, they're all done to support lobbying, done to support training, it's done to support business improvement schemes that the HTA run, the regional events. It's done to support the advice line, so we know what's happening out there as far as pests and diseases are concerned. So Pippa and Wayne who run the advice lines and the technical advice that the HTA offer. We do e-learning. We produce a fantastic conference every year, which I really do urge anybody, well, every member to attend if they yep. can. It really is worth going. I'm sure you'd agree. We do the award ceremonies. So we've got the Grower of the Year Award, the APL Awards. And of course, we use the information to drive sales for the National Garden Gift Card, which the HTA run, which is an absolutely incredible way of getting people to come into garden centres. £24 million last year in gross profit was attained through gift cards being spent in member centres. There's over 1,000 places where they can spend them in the UK.
That's fantastic, isn't it?
That's brilliant.
So that's sort of a brief resume of what the HTA do. My role, I suppose, really is where I chair the board meetings. I chair the council meetings. I also there and the board and the council are there to support the senior leadership team and the HTA and staff and what they do, and help create policy for the HTA to work to benefit the members. And I suppose having somebody like me in the organization, and we joined the HTA in the 1960s when they launched the garden, the National Gift Token Scheme, as it was then, but
okay,
the National Garden Gift Card. It's, I suppose, a bit of a custodian of the culture, really, just to make sure that the association is still heading in the direction that it needs to support its members.
So you touched on briefly about Parliament and one of the things you do. So recently you took the power of plants directly to Parliament.
Yeah.
So can you talk us through what the HTA was hoping to achieve with that initiative, you know, and what has the response been like, if there's been any, from MPs and policymakers?
The last event we did, there was over 100 MPs, parliamentarians and peers who came to collect a plant.
That's brilliant.
It was sponsored by Ben Goldsberry, the MP, who is a big supporter of us. And we were able to get to speak to the MPs and the Lords. The forced a connection so we could have a conversation. We could explain to them what we needed to do. And it enabled us to sort of push for our need for the Office for Green Space, which is something we're pushing MPs for. The other thing as well is we had a couple of members there as well. So we had Rebecca Grant of Joseph Rochford's, and we had Edward Campbell Preston of Capital Gardens as well. They were also there.
Right.
And on the back of this, we actually had an MP visit to one of the Capital Gardens garden centres. And so we were able to get an MP onto one of our members' sites and explain to them and talk to them about the issues that we're facing at the moment.
Did they listen?
They do listen. I was just looking. There was Jennifer's put something on LinkedIn this morning about the meeting that we had at Crystal Palace Garden Centre, which is one of the Capital Gardens garden centres. And yeah, so please look it up. Go and have a look.
Yes.
You mentioned about some of the issues that you've been raising with government. So things like retail theft was one that you mentioned. What are the biggest policy priorities that you see that the HTA wants to raise right now?
The biggest issue to our members at the moment is the cost of employing people. That seems to be from the message that we're getting back from the members. The cost of employing people, I think... peat legislation has gone quiet for the time being, but yeah, the Office for Green Space as well is something that we need to get across. You know, horticulture can do so much for the UK economy, can do so much for the UK health, the nation, and it's just not being, I don't think, taken as seriously as it could be by as many ministers as it could be.
Right, and the Office for Green Space, is that an office, a parliamentary office, which actually exists, or is that one you're trying to get?
It's one we're trying to get them to. It's one that we've got support. We've got vocal support, but nothing's happening just yet. And I think it's just a drum that we're going to have to keep on banging, because it makes so much sense. It's, you know, the horticultural sector is huge in the UK, and it's bigger than some of the sectors that we even have ministers for.
Yeah, I couldn't believe there wasn't one. I really couldn't, and I still can't. I really can't. So, I mean, I think I know the answer to my question is that do you feel that horticulture has been given the recognition it deserves at government level? I think I know what your answer might be.
Not yet.
Do you feel the change of government, has it made it easier? Is it making it harder? Are we back to the beginning again, or is it still kind of running?
We're not back to the beginning again. It's making it harder because they have a new agenda that they need to push. They have a party line that they can't deviate from yet. And I think over time, and as we get closer to the next election, they'll start listening more to what we have to say. It's the same old cycle. So not yet. But, you know, the HTA is doing so much more now. I think it's doing so much more now than it has done for, in my memory anyway, and experience of the HTA. So I'd say that's going back 20 years or so. More activity now, more lobbying, more connection with the members. It's just incredible. I'm just so proud to be part of it as well.
So we know that networking and peer learning are big parts of the HTA's offering. So can you just tell us a little bit more about the regional events that you organise and sort of what they are and who they're for?
Well, they're for every single member. So we're having regional events regularly throughout the year in all our regions. Tim and the team are out in the regions on a regular basis. And you don't actually have to come from that particular region to go to that regional event. You can travel the country if you want an excuse to go up to Scotland or down to the Southwest, or you could even tie it in with a family holiday. we go to the regional events and it's really an open forum. It's an opportunity to discuss issues as pertinent to the day and meet your colleagues, meet other members of the association. You know, lifetime friendships are formed at these events, groups, buying groups, marketing groups. We have them throughout the industry and they're all formed at these regional dues. So yeah, see, I think it's really important for the industry.
Yeah,
the regional events are coming up. So we've got the Northern Home Counties and the London regional event, which is going to be held at Joseph Rochford Gardens on the 3rd of June. We've got the Southeast regional event, which is going to be at Far Plants on the 16th of July. We've got a East Midlands event at Stratford Garden Centre on the 1st of July. We've got the West Midlands regional event at Lascot Garden on the 17th of July. So the East Anglian regional event is coming up on the 31st of July, and that's going to be at Darby's Nursery. And the Essex regional event is coming up on the 27th of August, and that's going to be at WD Smith & Sons and RHS High Hall.
Oh, nice.
Moving up the country, East Midlands on the 1st of July at Stratford, West Midlands on the 17th of July at Perennials Lascot Garden, and Yorkshire regional event on the 15th of July at Wickham Mature Plants. And then back down the bottom of the country on the 8th of July in the southwest, we're at Rocket Grow, South Central on the 24th of July at Thorn Bar, Southwest regional event on the 11th of September is at Monkton Elm. But on the 9th of September, the Devon and Cornwall regional event is going to be at the Eden Project.
Oh, lovely.
Going right up the top of the country. 25th of June, so coming back to spring again in Scotland, we're going to be at the James Hutton Institute in Dundee. The North of England regional event is going to be held at Westland, and it's the old Sinclair Horticulture site, and the Gordale Garden Centre as well over at... so it's the Westland site at... Ellesmere Port and then Gordale Garden Centre. That's on the 22nd of July. The Wales regional event is going to be at Frongoch Garden Centre on the 30th of July.
And do you go to all of these?
No. I try to go to as many as I possibly can. But there will always be somebody from the HTA there at these events. Obviously, it'll usually be part of the regional team will be there. But the members all support each other. The members of the team, the HTA team, will go and support each other's events as well. So there's usually somebody there. There's usually a technical person there as well.
Right.
Especially if there's some nurseries along. So we'll have Wayne or Pippa at one of these events. So that's usually really good. So yeah, there's a lot going on. I mean, and that's just summer.
But you totally encourage everyone to go along and to join their regional.
Support it because you never know what's going to happen in these things, you know, who you're going to bump into, what conversations are going to start there and move on to something else.
Yeah, and I think it just helps to underscore the point you made right early on in our conversation, Will, about the fact that it's a collaborative industry and these events are there for people to share and you know, to help each other, aren't they?
Yes, definitely, absolutely. It's part of that sharing process.
You mentioned there about the business improvement scheme. Just wonder whether you could just tell us a little bit more about that. And is that only for growers or who's it actually aimed at?
So it's aimed right across the board. So for growers and nurseries, we have the NBIS scheme, which is the Nursery Business Improvement Scheme. Right. We have one group which covers most of the UK. Mm-hmm. As numbers increase, we'll separate that out into two groups. We had a recent event down at Kernock Park Plants down in Cornwall, Saltash. Mm-hmm. Okay. Which was really, really interesting, looking at their robotics and their and the technology that they're embracing down there. Also the largest Wollemi pine plantation in the world as well, which is always quite an interesting thing to go and have a look at. Again, peat-free production as well, which was really, really interesting, how they're mixing their own peat-free compost.
Okay.
Really, really interesting stuff there. Mm. So part of my role as a consultant is I chair the NBIS group. We have BIS groups, which is the Business Improvement Scheme, which is aimed at sort of smaller nurseries and garden centres, so nursery retail nurseries and garden centres. So up to around about £3.5 million turnover. And we have several groups for those. So we have a Scotland group, which is one of the groups as I chair. I'm about to take over the East Anglia group, and Alison Haywood runs the other groups in the north of England and the Midlands.
Right.
So we meet quarterly. It's the same with EdBiz as well. We meet quarterly, and we also try and put in an optional study tour as well. And in June, we are heading over to Holland to see some retailing over in Holland. And we'll also be there for just the start of the flower trials as well. Right. So we'll get to see some of that as well. Okay. And then going up the scale to the larger garden centre groups, we have the RDF, which is the Retail Development Forum. And we have one group at the moment. It's a national group. And we're about to launch towards the end of this year, the second group for that. Okay. So Alison will do one and I will do the other.
So how do these business improvement schemes actually work in practice? I mean, what benefits do the members actually get from those?
So the format's pretty similar. We meet at each member's site, and we'll do a tour of the site and have a look around and look at some business practice there, best business practice, what works for them. And if they have any issues or things that they would like to gain or garner the opinions of the members from, they can express that in those meetings as well. So if you want to have a look at the entrance way or customer flow, or if there's an issue with a particular plant production as well, it's something they can float an idea around, or if they're wanting to look at funding from agricultural funding and sort of share ideas around that. We benchmark figures. So the HTA has the benchmarking database. So members will input their data onto the HTA website. And then what we can do at those groups is we can use that anonymized data to compare, and they can all see where they are on the financial reporting there as well. We can also look at other things. We can look at basket size, average sale, transaction numbers, turnover per square meter, sales per square meter. Again, with the nurseries, we're looking at productivity as well. So the size of the nursery and again, the sort of profits being generated from that size as well. Other income streams we look at. So a lot of nurseries now are looking at PVAs, photovoltaic arrays, and generating electricity through other means, and also feedback tariffs as well. We can compare just anything that's really interesting at that particular time. And it just gives the groups there, they're in charge, and I'm my position is there as a chairman just to make sure conversations going in the right direction all the time. But no, it really is open floor. Whatever they want to discuss gives them an opportunity to do that.
Okay. Well, I get the impression that you're a real people person and you love talking to people. I'm just wondering, from your conversations with the members, where do you see the biggest opportunities are for growth, whether that's through sort of technology or sustainability, education, or is it something else, do you think?
Ooh, gosh. Technology is really, really starting to come in now. Right. And that's being driven by the increasing cost of employed people.
Okay.
Now, whether that is in a nursery where robots are being used to plant cuttings or grade plugs, or whether it's in a garden centre environment where, you know, bean to cut machines are being employed more and more. But it's a really difficult one, because as an industry, we're so customer centric, and people buy from people sort of ethos, yeah. That nice place to be where other human beings are. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's even if it's a nursery or if it's a garden centre, you know, that level of customer service, it has to be the highest it possibly can be for what we're offering. So it comes at a price. So the struggle is always trying to find ways of introducing technology, but without losing that personal touch, that one-to-one element that we pride ourselves on throughout the industry, really. So growth, I don't know whether it's going to come from other product ranges, whether we can tap into other product lines that garden centers would be able to sell, or whether there are other things that nurseries can produce that the garden centers would benefit from. I don't know. I think that's got to be tried and tested, but yeah. Growth in the industry has got to come from reducing our costs.
Yeah.
It's the only way we're going to be able to invest in growth.
Yeah. So you mentioned there about the cost of employing people. Do you see that there's the horticultural industry is special in that respect, or is that just a thing that's covering the whole country? You know, every industry is the same.
Every industry is the same. We've seen the supermarkets ditching cafes and restaurants because they are so resource hungry on people front. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is affecting everybody and everything. Mm-hmm. We are particularly hard hit because we are very, very reliant on people. You know, we need lots of people to give that level of customer service.
Yeah.
I was talking to some of my members, and they're seeing a 10% increase on the cost of employing people. And that's on the back of 2 or 3 years of making no profit whatsoever. You know, breaking even over the last 2 or 3 years has been the norm. And now all of a sudden, you know, a garden center with, you know, £1 million wage bill is going to have to find another £100,000. The knock-on effect of that is you're going to need about a 20% increase in turnover to pay for that, just to stand still. And, you know, where's that going to come from? You can't, you know, if we, unfortunately this year, we're having a really good spring.
Yeah.
And the weather is helping. But my worry is that we just see that as a sticking plaster. It's just going to be a bit of anesthetic that's going to ease the pain a little bit for the time being. But if we get another, you know, if we get a poor back end of the year, or we get another horrible spring next year, it's going to cut deep, really deep, and it's going to hurt.
Yeah. And you're talking about nurseries investing in technology which will sort of replace some of the people that are required. But that requires a huge amount of investment, doesn't it?
It does. Unfortunately, there were government grants available for that. And that's another thing that we need to continue to push for, especially if we're investing in P3 technology as well. But yes, it does. It takes a hell of a lot of investment, which takes, you know, borrowing. And when you have, as an industry, we're sort of a bit of seen as a, because of what's been happening recently with Homebase and with Dobbies to a certain extent, you know, we're not seen as the sure bet we used to be seen as. It's a bit of a risky industry, so finance isn't as easy to come by. But there are always alternatives out there, and there are people who are willing to invest in the industry. Just have to look at different ways of doing it.
They're not all doom and gloom. I don't want to end on a doom and gloom note.
No, it's not doom and gloom at all. We're a resourceful bunch. You know, private enterprise is being targeted by this government because it's so resourceful, because it will find a way, because it has to. It has to survive. And the government has seen that, and that's why we're having so much pain inflicted on us.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a compliment, really, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose you could see it that way. Backhanded compliment. Well, it will. I'm going to finish off on a light note, because we like to do that on the podcast. And I'm going to ask you, do you have a plant, flower, or even a tree that, no matter what's going on, will always make you smile?
Yeah, I do. I've been asked this question before. It's a hornbeam.
Ah, okay.
We have a hornbeam at the end of our garden.
We have one right in the middle of our lawn, recently put there by me. Right. Yeah, I think it's always fascinated me. When our first house, growing up with my parents' house, we had a beech hedge around down the side of the drive. And right in the middle of it, I think it must have been an unscrupulous nursery that had created this hedging pack, because right in the middle of the hedge was a hornbeam tree that grew very differently from the rest of it, and would sprout these rather similar looking leaves to a beech, but different in so many ways. It looks like a beech tree a little bit, a small, certainly when it's been its hedging, but it's actually a member of the birch family, Cyprinus betulus. Yeah, and it's such a useful tree. I remember when we were doing back in when I was at college, and one of the modules I did was part of the conservation or the ecologist element was coppice, was learning about how trees were coppiced and why they were coppiced and what coppice is used for, and why it continues today, not really for the use of the timber, but the use of the ecological regions, especially for dormice.
Right.
But hornbeam was a highly prized coppice stalk, and everywhere would be hazel. But if you stumbled upon a hornbeam one, it was really, really unusual. And it's actually stronger than oak. It's one of the strongest
I didn't know that.
Timber you can get. Very, very slow growing. So it's yeah. So it's always had a bit of a mystery to it, you know, why is it that oak is considered to be such the strongest of all the timbers grown in the UK, when actually really it's by a long stretch is hornbeam.
It used to be used for cartwheels, apparently.
Yes, it did, and ox yokes as well. Yeah. So yes, absolutely, yeah. It's an incredible plant, and I have I love it. So the one that's stuck in the middle of our lawn, which is it's going to be turned into a cloud tree. So I've got clothes pegs on it at the moment, trying to select which branches that we're going to keep to create the cloud tree.
Oh, beautiful.
So it's a hornbeam with pink clothes pegs on at the moment. I keep moving the pegs around to sort of try and decide which branch is going to be the best one to cloud.
Fantastic. For those people like myself who have no idea what a cloud tree is, can you just tell us a little bit more?
So when the tree's quite young, you prune the you remove most of the branches, and you select and keep three or four at each level. So you work out which heights you're going to stick to, and then you let those branches grow out, and then you snip the end off, and you let the sprout from the end, and then you topiary that into sort of like a cushion shape.
Okay.
So from afar, it looks like clouds at different heights.
Got you.
Around a tree.
Sounds amazing.
Well, we'll see. It's going to take a few years to happen there, I think.
It's a long, long process and very, very expensive to buy a mature cloud prune tree. So, yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So typical Yorkshireman, I'm not going to buy one ready done when I can do it myself.
Wonderful. Well, that's the first time someone has said hornbeam as their favourite plant. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, I think that just about wraps things up. So thank you so much, Will, for joining us today.
Absolutely.
Really have enjoyed learning about your role within the HTA and your history in the industry as well. It's been absolutely fascinating. Thank
absolutely
you.
Fascinating.
Thank you. No, it's been good fun. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the underground, sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at wrightobarra.com.